So these tribes became like guaranteed taxpayer-supported markets for corporate products and services. A lot of these programs that were sold under the pretext of helping the poor were just really a strategy for the elites to redistribute the wealth from the middle class under the pretext of helping the poor. And you know, those policies in turn were projected out into the United States, costing the taxpayers billions upon billions of dollars. So the money that was generated from the casinos was used to finance the mergers and acquisitions departments of Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley. They could acquire contracts of an unlimited monetary amount, and regardless of how wealthy they became, they would always be classified as disadvantaged. The major defense contractors like McDonnell Douglas and Boeing and so forth were able to work behind them using the Alaska Native corporations as front groups, and then acquire these lucrative contracts through the back doors of the Indian tribes.
I'm proud to share with you Tetragen, which helps you transition to a healthier, happier, and thinner you without cravings or side effects. Our metabolic hormones are the underlying problem that doom every diet and exercise program to fail. They control our metabolism, cravings, how much we eat to feel satiated, blood sugar levels, and even our energy levels. Tetragen is formulated with four clinically proven patented ingredients that help rebalance your metabolic hormones in roughly 15 to 20 days, depending on the amount of weight you want to lose. Once your metabolic hormones are rebalanced, you'll be on the path to long-term, sustainable weight loss, because Tetragen is the first in the world which is scientifically formulated with four clinically proven and patented active ingredients to help you reach your targeted weight in two distinct phases. Phase one, rebalance your metabolic hormones, and phase two, accelerate fat loss. The best part is that Tetragen comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee. So what do you have to lose besides weight? Learn more with the link below.
Let's go through the military-industrial complex, because I think that gets into what's some of the things that I'm concerned about, some of the comments that if there's a civil war, that look to the Indian reservations. So I want to know, what are they doing from the military industrial complex to build up to build that up using Indian reservations?
Okay, that's a very good question. So just to kind of give you a sense of how these tribes are radical, the Navajo chair, Peter McDonald, who founded CERT, he presided over a sprawl, like he's like a little tin pot dictator. He presided over a large bureaucracy in Indian country. All the tribal members were quite poor in comparison. They're poor, dispossessed, living off of entitlements in what was essentially a socialized society. And McDonald and other tribal leaders are encouraged to think of white man as the enemy. So they become like Marxist leaders who support radicals like Che Guevara and others. And the radicalization happened actually during the administration of President Johnson, who created the Office of Economic Opportunity, which enabled him to pour money into Indian countries. And from that, of course, the corporations would get their share. And they would take the poor and dispossessed from around the world and help them become tribal members, even though they didn't have an ounce of blood, of tribal blood. This was first started through the Native American Rights Fund that was sponsored by General Motors, Standard Oil, the usual suspects. And they helped bring, they subsidized the lawyers who helped these non-Indians acquire tribal membership. Once they acquired tribal membership, of course, they would then turn on the Indians, because the Indians wanted to protect their assets, their tribal culture. The newcomers had no stake in preserving any of that. They were just there for materialistic reasons, to acquire the free benefits, free housing, free per capita payments. And a lot of them were radicalized, because they're now being given money from from the deep state, and they're essentially they're you know, placed into to jobs and corporations that are funded by the deep state and which work on their behalf. In terms of the military-industrial complex, once Nixon took over from LBJ, he tried to kind of clear up the Office of Economic Opportunity, and he placed Donald Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, and Frank Carlucci in charge of it. And so they reoriented the Office of Economic Opportunity to use the Indian tribes to kind of create new experimental programs and new military technologies. So they, you know, they worked through the OEL. They created the helped create the Carlyle Group. They relied upon Booz Allen Hamilton, you know, which was a deep state company that, you know, provided counsel to, you know, to Carlyle. They looked to Booz Allen Hamilton for instruction on what experimental programs they were to take. During the Iraq War, Booz Allen Hamilton advised the Bush administration and Carlyle on how to exploit opportunities through the war on terrorism to generate more contracts, you know, how they should approach the war and so forth. And then the Carlyle Group, in turn, was acquired by Kinetech. And Kinetech, of course, was controlled by the Queen of England. And, you know, it holds the patents to a number of the technologies that were first experimented with and tried during war. Like, so, for example, Booz Allen Hamilton rolled out, it's called like the Blue Force Tracking System, and that enabled them to locate their military and to follow their military vehicles in Afghanistan. That same tracking technology is now, you know, applied in America. They also used facial recognition software to track and identify every face of every male Afghani during the war on terrorism. And now that facial recognition software is being applied to us. So these were the, you know, these are the companies that are harvesting information. They're building the weaponry. They're designing the wars. They're trying to, you know, to extract and control and acquire the natural resources of countries, you know, around the world. The Carlyle Group was able to acquire the position that it had through the Alaska Native corporations. And the Carlyle Group was created through the advice and counsel of Booz Allen Hamilton. It was then acquired by the Queen of England through Kinetech. And the Kinetech is the leading global corporation that is controlled by the Queen of England through her golden share. And of course, she receives advice and counsel from the Rothschilds. They have, you know, they hold the leading patents for different military technologies. Like that's they generally roll out the policy, the technologies, you know, that comprise the deep state.
One thing you said is that the tribes were being radicalized. Now, why would they want to radicalize the tribes? What does that do to benefit the deep state and the global agenda?
That's a very good question. So essentially, they were making the American Indian opposed to the wider white American society. They enabled them to see the ordinary white American as an enemy. And from that position, they were then able to make the case that they wanted more land, they wanted more money. So one strategy that they would use is that they would say, well, you know, the white man has stolen all of our natural resources. You know, they've been persecuting us, and we therefore deserve to be compensated. But after these energy companies would, you know, steal the natural resources, they'd wait a few decades, and then the elites would hire attorneys to coach the Native Americans to sue the federal government for not providing proper stewardship for their land and resources. The federal government would then turn around and give them billions of dollars for the loss of their land that was exploited by these evil white people. And they would, of course, have the moral grounds to do so. And the billions that they were given went back into the hands of these elites. They could make the case that, you know, these evil whites, took advantage of us. They're trying to infringe upon our culture. Therefore, we're entitled to a sacred mountain, you know, that they claim to use for burial ground or, you know, for their religious rituals. America, you know, the federal government will then be coaxed into giving them that land. And then once that has been done, you'll see that the energy energy companies will go in there and extract, you know, the minerals from that land. So it's used as a way for them to claim a level of victimhood. And from that victimhood, they can grant concessions, from the federal government. And if you don't grant those concessions, or if you're not sympathetic, you could then be called a racist and, you know, unsympathetic to a victimized class of people.
Well, and the Indians started pushing back, or they have been for a long time, obviously. What is going on with that? Because they don't like being taken over, and they don't like their families being killed, you know, kids being killed in these homes. And they saw it. They know what's going on. One thing that I saw a quote is that the Indians are the most educated on this because they have seen, let me see if I can find your quote exactly, but they have seen, okay, this is what you said. Natives have long known the secrets of the elites, having experienced their shadowy manipulations firsthand. So it's probably like anything else. There's a class of people that get it and see it. And then there's a class of people that are constantly easily manipulated. And then the manipulated ones are a larger bunch of people. It's kind of like there's a group of people that see this manipulations and we're seeing it and we can't stand it. But the larger bunch of people out there are still being manipulated easily, and it's driving us crazy. And so that's what the natives experienced as well.
Correct. So the natives, of course, they're experiencing the machinations of the elite firsthand, because they're living in the Indian reservations, which are the experimental, the petri dishes of these grotesque global programs. Just to give you, one example, and also to expand upon that, one reason why they're not listened to, I know that a lot of it natives have grievances, is that they can approach the government with the fraud and corruption that is going on their Indian reservation, and they're consistently told that if they have grievances, they need to take their case to the tribal council. Of course, the tribal council and the tribal courts are generally controlled by these corporations. And the federal government will only deal with the tribal council. So the individual tribal member has no voice and no influence. Like they're largely dismissed.
God, that'd be terrible. God, it's unbelievable, but go ahead.
So one tribe that I was able to observe, I guess, firsthand, I acquired a lot of paperwork from that reservation, is the Saginaw Chippewa Indian Tribe of Michigan. And with this specific tribe, the Indians were in control of their own tribal government until roughly around the 1970s. Then around the 1970s, General Motors relocated from Flint to Detroit, leaving thousands of people in Flint destitute. Many of those individuals wound up on the Indian reservations through different poverty programs that were sponsored by foundations affiliated with General Motors and Dow Chemical and so forth. So they were able, through these programs, non-natives were able to acquire control of their government. Then with that control, they worked with the Native Rights Foundation, Native American Rights Fund, to solidify their control, to rewrite their constitution, to have it pushed through fraudulent methods, meaning like it was put before the vote of the Indian people. The Indian people rejected it. They then held their own election off reservation, got fraudulent ballots, presented those ballots as evidence that the natives supported it. Once the elites acquired control, they got the money for the casino. Even though a number of their tribal members and their government were not legitimate tribal members, a number of these individuals also were able to create fictitious identities. So while the Native American would have a high level of Indian blood that they could prove, their blood quantum was reduced on paper, while these fictitious Indians would see their own blood quantum, Native blood quantum, increased. They would fabricate histories. They would create change genders and backgrounds on paperwork to create individuals who really didn't exist. And in the late 1990s, that the Native Americans attempted to reacquire to take over their tribe and to push the natives out, or the non-natives out. And before they could do so, the Clinton administration sent the FBI and various law enforcement to their reservation to stage a coup d'etat, the type you'd see in a third world country, a coup d'etat to throw out the natives from their own tribal council, and then to implant these fictitious Indians again.
Oh, geez.
So it's like a third world country, and they have the drugs peddled on their reservations, brought in like black planes in the dark of night. And a lot of them are subjected to terrifying conditions. It's like a police state where they're harassed by the tribal police. Their courts are controlled by the government, and they could find themselves, falsely accused and with very little recourse, because their Bill of Rights have been suspended there as well.
Well, let me ask you, I want to ask you how Tor came up with this comment that look to the Indian reservations if there's a civil war. What would you think that would mean with all your background and all your understanding? Would they actually be able, because the rules are different, would they actually be able to bring in troops? Like they brought in the Syrians to be on the Indian reservations. Obama getting around the rules could do that. The Chinese is doing it in Canada. Could they feasibly use those Indian reservations however they wanted to bring it, build up troops and do all this stuff and then attack us from there? Could they feasibly do that?
It's possible because an outsider cannot get access to the Indian tribes, without the tribal permission. So if they're controlled, by corrupt individuals, of course, outsiders would not be able to get in. The Indian tribes work hand in hand with the military industrial complex. So yes, they could be, developing, different defense technologies on the reservations. They could be recruiting Syrians. I know that with one tribal council, the tribal chief is actually an illegal immigrant. Many other Indian tribes are filled with these refugees because these refugees come in with very few skills, with little money. If they're able to get these individuals onto the membership rolls, the refugees are guaranteed income, free housing, free medical care, and the money and wherewithal to purchase products. And so they can then be radicalized because they're a captive audience and they're dependent upon the system, the tribal system for their sustenance. They can then be radicalized and moved, to further an agenda.
And the regular Indian doesn't like it. I mean, they don't want all these other people on their land and they just have no rights, right? They just are patsies essentially. And a lot of the people who are elites running it is kind of like our Congress. They're controlled, they're blackmailed, they're whatever else. So
correct.
The average Indian is just kind of like us. They can't do much because their Congress, their people in charge are all blackmailed and controlled.
That's correct, and you may have noticed that our elites are trying to push a type of guaranteed income for us. The natives have this guaranteed income, and they know that if they're too critical of their government, that they can stand to lose that income. Like their per capita payments will be cut off, and they can be banished from the tribe and all of its privileges. So they create a level of dependency that these elites are now trying to impose upon us, so that you really cannot act, because to do so might result in losing your social credit score, which in turn might cause you to lose your job or lose privileges that you depend upon.
So if you had a guaranteed income, they would just like having a chip. If you don't have this, they just cut you off. A guaranteed income, you don't do what we say, you just don't get paid.
Correct.
So, but would you have to work? So a lot of people would like it because they don't have to do squat.
That's correct. I know within the Indian country, a lot of you would think that the casinos and other tribal businesses would employ Indians, but oftentimes Native Americans aren't even allowed to hold those jobs.
Really? Why is that?
Because the businesses are controlled by the elite, and generally speaking, you know, the Indians have blown the whistle on corruption, money, you know, that was disappearing through the back door. So they want to be able to get away with whatever they're planning to do there without interference from the Indians.
It's kind of like now I'm hearing stories of the officers in the military or soldiers in the military that know too much. Suddenly all these people are disappearing. And that's going on right now. I'm seeing reports. I'm getting sources that the people who know too much are disappearing. And we're seeing the same thing with doctors over the years. The doctors who know solutions or know what's going on are disappearing. And that's the same thing there. They just don't want them involved in it. They might not be disappearing as much as they just won't let them even get close to it.
Yes, that's true. And imagine that, you know, these were societies that were created of, by, and for the Indians. And they're seeing these newcomers come in, they disparage the Native culture, they're taking money out the back door, you know, they're really destroying everything that they thought they had, just as, you know, in a similar vein, you know, the elite are doing that to our society. You know, they're bringing in people who don't appreciate what we built here and are tearing it down.
Well, and how do you see us moving forward with them? Because I you know, I feel for them just like I feel for us. And the more people that can see that this is all, that all of us are in the same boat together versus turning into this this tribal warfare. They want all the blacks against the whites and the Indians against the whites and everybody against the whites and then us against the Chinese. And it's really all of us people are being treated the same way.
Correct.
And how do we wake people up so that they see that, wait a minute, we're being treated the same way as you. We never, the average person didn't want slavery. The average person, they don't want stuff like this. It was always the elites doing it and rewriting history and imposing this on people. How do you wake them up? Because when you look at, you know, the research we've done, the people who came over here who were Christianity, they love everyone. Yeah, there's always been social racism and all sorts of crap, but at its heart, they care about the soul.
You do.
And so that doesn't translate into all these activities that are going on.
That's correct. I mean, I think the elites have tended to accuse other people of what they've done themselves. And the reason they're able to bring forth these accusations is that they are aware of them having, you know, since they committed them in the first place. So they tried to use these grievances and the stress that they've inflicted upon communities to their own advantage to amass more, you know, more power and more wealth for themselves. And if they can control the narrative, they can agitate people into working on their behalf to achieve it. But I think, you know, these elites follow the same playbook that they've done for generation after generation. So I think it's important for the people of any race to see that pattern for what it is. And I think once they have that knowledge, they can identify the real culprit, you know, who the real culprits are, and begin to, you know, to recognize our shared humanity.
What do you think is going forward now with what is happening? I mean, how do we educate everybody in saying, hey, we're all in this together? And do you think that showing people that, you know, the truth, just showing them the truth that this is what they have done to you and now they're doing it to us, is that enough to get people to see what's going on? Or do you think that kind of like, you know, I've been trying to get to some people who are so, they're so hurt by what these people have done to them that they can't see past really the bigger picture, and they blame it on just the white people instead of seeing past and seeing the bigger agenda. How do we get people past this hurt into seeing, wait a minute, that's not the truth. The truth is that we're all in this together. How do we get people past that hurt?
I think, yeah, again, we're looking at a process of education. I think for a long time, even, you know, white America was not aware of its own, like, lack of complicity in a lot of these crimes. And I think right now we are in a period of education and enlightenment where the truth is coming forth. So, I think that, you know, we are seeing that African-Americans, like, you know, Kanye West is one of them, are breaking away from the plantation, and they are seeing the elites for who and what they are. Candace Owens, you know, is also another, you know, leader who is able to identify what the problem is and to speak to, you know, her own, you know, her own demographic in terms that they understand to help them, you know, come to the truth. But I, you know, I would encourage, I guess more education and more sharing of our, you know, of our shared battles, and so that we can, you know, come together as a people. But I think it is done. It would be done through a process of education.
Yeah, I think the education is, and just keep doing this over and over. But is this enough? And I you know, there was a glimmer of hope here, this education, and we talked about it before we came on, where you talked about the COVID, their plan to do the vaccines, and you're hearing indication they're backing out now because we have educated people and they can't just cram things down people's throat because there's no legitimacy, because we're all going to say, you guys are idiots. We're going to say it in mass, and they aren't going to be able to accomplish their goals. And so they're realizing that. And so that was where the truth movement really, really made a difference. Can you talk about that?
Sure. I think, the power that the elites have, and of course, they have a phenomenal amount of wealth and technology and power at their fingertips. But the truth is that there are far more of us, you know, we the people, than there are them. And they depend upon us, like the perception of their legitimacy, the perception of their power, for them to be able to act with impunity and to do what they do. So the more people who are privy to the agenda, to the patterns, to the strategies that these people employ, the less, the weaker the, you know, the less effect they will have on us. It's like, you know, with so many Americans are able to see through the fake news. So that their efforts of propaganda are no longer having the intended effect. So I think it really does again boil down to the people becoming aware of their own power, being able to educate themselves and educate others to see through the agenda. And once that agenda has been pierced, you know, I think the elites will cease to have power. And we will also see that that they've built their they've acquired their power through illegal and illicit means. And I think they're also, you know, legally liable and, you know, stand to face justice if there's sufficient political will for that to happen.
Basically, political will and all of us stand together is our best hope, right? I mean, the more people are educated, they have to back down because truth is evident, right? Truth usually wins overall.
It is.
And they will look really bad in history. They're going to try to rewrite the history books and that, but if they don't have the power to do it because there's too many people that say, hey, BS, then it's not going to work.
That's correct. And yeah, if we can imagine back in the 1900s, early 1900s, the Bolsheviks were able to take over you know, Russia through revolution. They are trying to employ similar tactics here in the United States. They try to whitewash what really happened in Bolshevik Russia. But a lot of people are becoming aware of what happened during the Bolshevik Revolution. They're able to see the patterns, identify the players, strategies, and networks. And in turn, they're able to prevent, or they're at least so far, they've been able to prevent or neutralize a lot of what the American Bolsheviks were trying to accomplish.
And what are they trying to accomplish? Just get, I know we covered it in our last show, which I really recommend that people listen to this, but it, you know, the last show we did, which was phenomenal, but can you give us just kind of an overview and maybe give them a precursor of what they should listen to in the last show of what they're trying to really accomplish here in this country?
Okay. I'd be happy to do so. So, the revolutionaries are essentially bankrolled by corporate America, or, you know, by multinationals, not necessarily American, but it's by the, you know, by Wall Street, to create a sense of grievance, you know, to mobilize and agitate the working poor. And a lot of the working poor are impoverished and oppressed, not through any fault of their own, but because of the system these elites have created, you know, with the excessive taxation and with overregulation, you know, by limiting their, you know, the freedoms and options and ability for the oppressed to be self-sufficient, self-actualized people who can, you know, provide for themselves and generate their own wealth. The revolutionaries come in and they appeal to the grievances of the oppressed, and they claim to speak for them, they then target their anxiety on the property holders, the property owners, with a view to taking, mobilizing the mob, if you will, pitchfork wielding mob, to assign blame to the middle class, maybe the upper middle class, to take their assets, to take their property for the poor. But what happens is that the middle class, the upper middle class, are pushed down into the poor, and the wealth and the power is pulled upward towards the elites. So ultimately, they are seeking power and control over every aspect of society. They want to reduce us essentially to farm animals, where, you know, our movements, our individuality, our individual choices are all limited and circumscribed. And they want us to have very little means for independent wealth, to be able to own land, to have any property. They want control of all of it. And the Bolsheviks and their controllers are essentially satanic, too. And so they've often achieved their power through terror, mind control, murder, torture, just a grievous crime that tend to terrorize and intimidate good people who are, intimidated into passivity, like a learned helplessness. But ultimately, they want full dictatorial control over the U.S.
Yeah, that's what I see as well. They just want a complete control. Well, give your spiel of all your books, because you have incredible research, and it's really, really incredible what you've done. Your background is very impressive. So can you tell us what books that you have available and where they can get your more information about you?
Oh, absolutely. My website is susanbradford.org, and that's SusanBradford.org. One of my first books is called Lynched, and that book provides the full story, a background to the Abramoff investigation, which reveals how the deep state and Bob Mueller set up Republican super lobbyist Jack Abramoff for wrongful prosecution in order to steal his book of business for themselves. My next book was The United Church of Heist, which reveals how the deep state took over the Protestant denomination to use the Democratic, or to use the church as a weapon for the Democratic Party. My book, The Tribes That Rockefeller Built, reveals how the Rockefeller clan and their corporate allies set up Indian country and the various policies within Indian country to enrich themselves and subjugate the nation. My book on The Shadow Dragon reveals how our political classes and a number of our successive administrations worked with the British elites to sell our country out to communist China. The second American Revolution reveals how Henry Kissinger helped facilitate the arrival of Bolsheviks within our political structure, which has led to a number of the problems that we're facing today with these different Bolshevik revolutions. He essentially empowered them and put them into positions of power. And then my most recent book, Unmasked, The Coronavirus Story, reveals how the elites set up the corporate or the coronavirus pandemic and the riots that we've seen in Minneapolis around the country through Black Lives Matter in order to shore up money, power, and wealth for the pharmaceutical companies, for defense contractors, and for the healthcare industry.
Yeah, and I just recommend it. I read your first book, and I read portions of this book too. I just couldn't get through it all in time, but I read a big chunk of it, and I learned a ton. You have so much information with resources and references and documents that you researched to show this and put it all together into a big picture. I'm just very impressed. But with your background, you have a unique insight into this, and you know, being the speechwriter, right, both for the shadow secretary in England and for the ambassador of South Korea. And then you also were the main investigator for the Abramoff case. And you also, what did you do? You sat on, in England, you were on a council. What council was that?
That was the Atlantic Council, which it was the Public Relations Office of NATO. It was based in London.
Yes, and you learned a ton there. And then you were also a producer, what, at BBC and at Fox News?
I appeared on the BBC to discuss Michael Howard's candidacy for prime minister. He was a shadow foreign secretary previously, but I worked as a producer for Fox News Channel and then also as a writer for CBS News.
Yeah, that was CBS News. Very impressive. Why did you leave mainstream media to do this? Because I know you can't do what you're doing in mainstream media. There's no way you could do this. You'd be fired in an instant. So what made you leave and get into this kind of material?
That's a very good question. At the height of the North Korean conflict, that was during the Bush administration around 2003, 2004, the neoconservatives were trying to stir up war against North Korea. And at the time, I decided to work for the Korean embassy to help kind of neutralize that element and to encourage diplomacy and other incentives, economic investments to prevent war on the North Korean peninsula. And after that point, I worked on the Abramoff investigation for a number of years. And by the time that I had completed the Abramoff investigation, the news organizations were scaling back their investigative news divisions, and a number of them were laying off their employees and hiring propagandists and opinion journalists as opposed to real reporters and investigative reporters. I mean, at the time, we thought that they were simply they simply didn't have the budget for original journalism anymore. But I think now, looking back in retrospect, we can see that they are more interested in pushing creating a consensus and using the media as a PR arm for private special interests.
Yeah, it's very clear, isn't it?
It's very clear looking back in retrospect.
Yeah, it's very sad. We have no democracy if it's all or no republic. And no way of having a free society when the masses are manipulated. And that's what we're doing right now. So the only way to counteract that is to give them other outlets where they're not manipulated. And if we don't get to the masses and they're just constantly manipulated, we're screwed.
No, that is true. But I think I'd like to give the masses more credit. I think they're a lot more intelligent than we give them credit for. I think a lot of people are privy to the agenda, but maybe they don't have the courage to acknowledge it. But I think people are waking up.
And I think your example of showing that they had to back off the vaccine thing, well, they're going into other Africa and other countries now, which is sad. So they're just going to use other people. But at least here, the group of us, there was an army of us that just went crazy over this. And it made a difference.
That's exactly correct.
So there is a bright light.
There is a bright light. And as we continue to push back, they will have to make allowances. And I think there are a lot of indications, that I'm seeing that they are losing control.
Which is fantastic. And we should end that there because that's a high note. And we need to have you back again because I know you're constantly doing amazing research. So will you stick around for my patrons?
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you, Susan.
You're welcome. Thank you.